Good morning, everybody. It's good to be here. For those that are newer here, I'm Steve Oriole. I'm one of the elders at Living Way, and during Christmas, all the elders get to speak. So it was my turn this week, and I'm going to do something that's very different for me. And my son David texted me and said, "Oh, you're speaking tomorrow." And I go, "Yeah," and I'm actually nervous because I don't have a PowerPoint. So if you're YouVersioning it and you're looking for a PowerPoint, it's not there. And I'm addicted to them. You guys are addicted to them as well. So now you're going to have to, there's no PowerPoint. You do have bulletins if you want to take notes, but I'm not going to have my usual 5-point message with all the scriptures and everything. So I'm a little bit nervous there. And then actually, I'm not just saying this, but one of my favorite preachers of all time shows up, and John Lucas just shows up in the back, and he's like, "Let's welcome John Lucas, Pastor John Lucas." And he ministered to us for years and years and years, and he's such a joy of the Lord. When I think of him, I think of the joy of the Lord. And so thanks for making me nervous here. Appreciate it. But I've heard so many good Christmas messages over the past 30 years coming here, and I thought, okay, what am I going to do that's a little different? And I was thinking, maybe something on the manger, and heard a great message last week on the manger, and thought, no, that's not the direction I was going, but it was really good about, you know, the manger and the symbol, the typology there of it just being coming to the dirty places of your life that Jesus wants to clean out. And so I was thinking of weaving something in there. And I was then really thinking, I heard Joe's message last week. That was just great. And I thought, I've been thinking about it for quite a while, that Christmas is a time of restoration. You know, it's not only a time where he comes to seek and save the lost, but also where he restores maybe those that have fallen away, maybe those that are just having a hard time. And as we get older, you know, the joy of the excitement of Christmas and all that is perhaps not as much as when we had young kids or when we were young ourselves. And so I travel quite a bit. And just this morning, I got a update on my year-end travels. And so it was took 29 trips, 135 days, 109,867 miles. Think of all the points. And 35 different cities. And so my job now, I'm in charge of operations for a division of a large company. So we have various plants throughout the United States, and most of it is to encourage and really to just make sure that we all have the proper resources and processes and procedures to make sure that things happen and we meet our commitments to our customers. And so this last few weeks, I've gone to a couple plants, and I gave some real sage advice. And that was because a lot of the managers there have little kids, is like, read the instructions. Because all of them, the same thing, they don't have any room, and so they have the bicycles, the tricycles, the whatever in the garage. They're going to put it together after the kids go to sleep on Christmas Eve, and they're going to put it together in 5 minutes because, you know, I'm an engineer. These people who put these bikes together are not engineers, or they don't think like engineers do. Read the instructions, and that's from experience. So they thanked me for that. So this morning, instead of having that PowerPoint that up there, I really felt led to just have sort of very much of a chat with you, a fireside chat, if you will. So there won't be a whole bunch of scriptures up there, but just a bunch of observations. But I know that we are so used to having these great revelations here and things to ponder upon, that while I was studying for the manger, I came across something out of Micah 4. And in Micah 4, and I'm not going to go with Micah 4, it's just here's just something so you guys can chew on yourselves and research a little bit later on. But us old timers remember Micah 4 from "Come and let us go into the house of the Lord," right? All that. and he will teach us of his ways, right? Remember that song? So I'm not going to sing it because I can't remember how it went, but we all remember that. But in Micah 4:8, there's a theologian, Cooper Piedrums, that postulates that maybe this is where Jesus was born. Micah 4:8 says, as for you, O watchtower of the flock of Zion, the former dominion will be restored to you. Kingship will come to the daughter of Jerusalem. Migdal Eder, which is the watchtower, was a watchtower located in the northern part of Bethlehem, built to protect the temple flocks. So during the lambing season, the sheep were brought there from the fields as the lower level functioned as the birthing room for sacrificial lambs. Priestly shepherds would wrap the newborn lambs in swaddling clothes and place them in the manger until they calmed down, to keep them without defect, suitable to be a sacrificial lambs for the sin of the Israelites. So Bethlehem was special because the shepherds in the fields of Bethlehem raised lambs for the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. The shepherds who heard the angelic choir and came to see baby Jesus were certainly familiar with the technique to birth a sacrificial lamb and were likely puzzled by why the baby was birthed in the manner and location of a sacrificial lamb. I'd never heard that or seen that, and I forced myself not to go down that bunny trail and research it, but I've got it tagged all over the place so I can see that. So that's such a neat thing, because, you know, it was obvious that God had a plan that Jesus was going to be born in a manger and something like that. It was just kind of neat. So there is your deep theological tidbit, so you can go out and research and just say it wasn't a bunch of fluff and all that kind of stuff. So, okay? There it is. But as I was saying, Christmas is a time of restoration. He came to seek and save the lost, but in Matthew 15, he also tells the Canaanite woman that I came for the sheep, the tribe of Israel, which means he came for his people, right? That's what he was coming for. And I've been in this church for quite a while, and, you know, the transition has been wonderful. Going from Pastor Doug, who really had a heart for missions, and we had a heart for missions and continue to have a heart for missions, to his son, Pastor Daniel, who has a heart for the lost. You know, the people, not necessarily the ones that don't know Jesus, but the ones that knew Jesus and, you know, had something happen in their life, whether it was, just the cares of this life, you know, that drowned out what was going on. Maybe they got hurt by someone in the church, or got hurt by the church itself. But whatever it is, it's that heart that he has that Joe and I have told him, you know, it's not normal. It really isn't, because you have just such a heart of forgiveness that's definitely a gift of God that can do that, because it's a true forgiveness there. And so I really feel that, you know, we're going to be here. We are, you know, a healing place, a restorative place. And that's really what I want to talk about. And this is, you know, restoring not only people that may not have been coming to church, but also maybe, just restoring the zeal that we once had. And every year we watch, Christmas movies. Kathy and I do sometimes try to grab the kids, and I should probably say a little bit better, we sleep through most of the Christmas movies as they're on there. And this last one we watched, Polar Express. And, you know, the parts that I really wasn't awake for was towards the end. And maybe, you know, a lot of us can hear that bell all the time, but maybe some of us, that bell is a bit soft, or maybe some of the people we know, that bell has gone soft. And I think we can have that, you know, help in getting people to hear that bell again, if you will. So God tells us in Galatians 6, you know, that we who are spiritual, you who are spiritual, restore those who've fallen. And it underlines, emphasizes gently. Restore them gently. And you know, passage continues that we should carry each other's burdens, you know, so that we can actually fulfill the law of Christ. And we should also test our own actions to make sure we're not doing that, you know, to put a little notch on our belt or comparing ourselves to others. And how do we, you know, check our own actions? And I know certainly I have put so many limitations on God in my life. And, you know, if we really want to understand what our motives are, seeing Jeremiah 33:3 this way, but it's just, you know, cry out to me and I will answer and show you great and wonderful things. And I was always thinking, you know, about the world, about yourself, about what's going on in here, great and wonderful things that are going on in there. And so that's something we can do, is cry out and say, God, you know, show me what's going on. And it's a lot easier said than done. A lot easier said than done, because it just is. So a few weeks ago, as I was sort of figuring out what am I going to talk about, I ran into Sister Bradley, and I did warn her. If you know Christy Bradley, you know, we just ran out there, and it was really sort of a corrective type of encounter, because she had the audacity to actually have her arms through the sleeves of her sweater, you know, instead of having the sweater around here. And she didn't have the little gold chain that puts it there, you know, gold representing the purity of God. And she said, good morning, Steve, instead of Brother Ariola, and took my whole hand. And it was just like the impropriety was shocking. But after I finished giving her a hard time and she hit me on the arm, our whole conversation was just speaking about being real, you know, about being authentic and genuine, and about just not being fruit inspectors, because she had whatever the circumstance was there of just, you know, trying to restore people that she had come across in her life. And it was sort of just clicking, you know. I don't know if she knows that, but it was just clicking, like, that's what I've been thinking about and praying about. And you know, and so it was really a confirmation for me. And so we're, you know, the world around us is just changing so much, and it's changing so quickly, yet everyone wants the same thing. We want to belong to someone. We want to love. We want to be loved. And we want to be accepted. And that's just something that's humankind. And we see our society that is just going, you know, it's going a million miles an hour, but who knows where. And we're tired. And, you know, Jesus said that we were really good at interpreting the weather, but we didn't interpret the times. And that's probably still the case. It wasn't just for, you know, the church then. And so we're living in an area, you know, a world that's tired and beat up, and we're seeing the, you know, the symptoms there. It's hard for, you know, us to be exuberant when we're just feel weighed down. All of us, whether we are in church, out of the church, in the world, we're constantly feeling judged. You know, that there are thought police that are coming in and looking at us, and people are feeling alienated because they can't have their own thoughts, or thoughts that are contrary to what's going on, what the thought police are saying. And we don't have any more open discussion. We can't debate anything anymore. So, you know, I think it was the University of Delaware. I didn't even know they had a basketball team, but they came into to play the University of North Carolina, which I'm going to see next weekend. And, you know, it wasn't going to be a much of a basketball game, but, you know, they came in a rainbow colored, you know, sweats, because they were protesting the audacity of the state of North Carolina to put a law out there that men had to use men's bathrooms and women had to use women's bathrooms. And so if I don't agree with that, then I'm a homophobe, I'm a racist, misogynist, you fill in the blank, and then at the very end, a Neanderthal as well. So, you know, just because there, so we don't even have the ability to have that open debate anymore. And so people are beginning to revolt about it. And, you know, it started in across the pond over there in England with Brexit, you know, and Boris Johnson is a buffoon and da da da. But people said, you know, we're tired of just paying for everybody else. They went out, they put it out. It happened here in our own country, you know, that people are just tired. I'm not enamored with what happened, but I understand that the voice there of being, you know, called you're a reprobate if you even think this way, you know, you're just a Neanderthal. It was crazy. And you know, if you think that way, you're a sexist, you're a racist, whatever. But you know, the numbers are pretty telling, and I always look at numbers because you can never hear, you know, what's going on the news and all that stuff. That whole fake news thing right now is just really fascinating as it's evolving and all that. But you start looking at numbers, and that just comes from my love. When I was in school, I had a public health course in statistics, and the opening class, the very first class, was 95% of all deaths occur in hospitals in North America, making a hospital the most dangerous place to work. And it was like, what? And her whole point was, you can make statistics say anything you want. Anything you want. But then sometimes statistics are pretty crazy and pretty definitive, like out of the 3,100 counties in the United States, 3,000 of them voted for our current president-elect. And that was a repudiation to the status quo. It was a repudiation to both political parties. But people are just tired of being judged. And, you know, that's something that we need to understand, because it's in the world, it's in the natural, but it's also, you know, probably you see it in church where it's supposed to be safe, and where we're judged, or we judge people. So I remember when I was at in college at UCLA, and the axis is spinning. The earth is spinning correctly on its axis now. The Bruins are 10-0, rated number 2, actually stomped Kentucky on their home ground. I watched the game. It was just like they were in awe. First team that scored that many points against a Calipari team. So finally, it's spinning true again. Finally, we'll see. Don't blow it. I hope I didn't jinx it. Now it's okay. You know, I'm not superstitious. Don't judge me because I said jinx. Okay, so it's okay. So, but anyways, back then, the Jesus movement was a big thing. And I went to the Newman Center. The Newman Center was, Catholics had on campuses, like Campus Crusade. And, you know, Jesus is a bunch of do's and don'ts. It's not a bunch of do's and don'ts. It's not a bunch of do's and don'ts. It's about, you know, a relationship with him. And yet, you would, go to service, and it was a bunch of do's and don'ts. And Jesus isn't, but because you want to do some of these things. But as we were trying to be, you know, put into the box, it was kind of interesting. So how do we become, you know, a instrument that can restore people, that can, and how do we get restored? And I love the book of Romans. I got to take some of the class with Christy's dad, Milt McEvane. He just had such a good grasp on that book. But that book, the first 11 chapters of it are really the rule book. It's the doctrine. It's the theology. It's such a great, book that's there. You get a whole bunch of verses that we all know about, the righteous shall live by faith. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. We're dead to sin and alive to God. you know, the salvation, if we confess with our mouth. Many of you know all of these verses and believe in our heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And it's not through our works, but through confession of our faith. It's a great book that just gives you those first 11 chapters. Here's the foundation. But then chapters 12 through 16 are the playbook. First part's the rule book, and the second part's the playbook. And so that's the part that that I'd like to talk about. It's just sort of for the restoration part of it. And the first thing is one of my favorite verses in the Bible, and that's Romans 12, 1 and 2. And it's I'm going to read it out of the Amplified, because I appeal to you, therefore, brethren, and beg of you, in view of all of God's the mercies of God, to make a decisive dedication of your bodies, presenting all your members and faculties as a living sacrifice. The original NIV had burnt offering there. Holy, devoted, consecrated, and well-pleasing to God, which is your reasonable, okay, rational, intelligent service and spiritual act of worship. Do not be conformed to this world, fashioned after and adapted to its external and superficial customs, but be transformed, changed by the renewing, the entire renewing of your mind, by its new ideals and its new attitude, so that you may prove for yourselves what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God, even the thing which is good and acceptable and perfect in his sight for you. So the first thing we need to do is obviously just buy into the whole Christmas thing and God's coming, hook, line, and sinker, everything. Turn your life over. Living sacrifice. Like I said, the NIV, there had burnt offering. That burnt offering was complete. You know, you didn't get to keep the offal for making the waxes. You didn't get to keep the hooves and the leather. It was everything. And that's all in. We need to be all in with there. And, you know, we did that a long time ago. And I can tell you that 20 years ago, I wouldn't have predicted what has gone on in my life over those last 20 years, and it's changed. I can't say it was easy, but God has done great and wonderful things, and it was difficult at times, and God, you know, was gracious to me and gave me a great life partner to walk through all of the things that have gone on. And all those circumstances and all those things that happen don't define me. What defines me is my identity with Christ. Yes. That's what defines us. And we have to remember that, is that that's what we're defined by. So, you know, I don't want to say we were sold necessarily a bill of goods, but, you know, there were a lot of formulas that if you do this, this will happen. And we homeschooled all our kids, and this is going to happen, this is going to happen if you do this. And that's not quite the case. And so going through that and seeing your children struggle and suffer is hard for a parent, as all of you parents know. Yet the grace of God and the faithfulness of God and the mercy of God, and they come through it and come out better for it, and that's great. And it's wonderful. So we completely turn over ourselves to God. That's the first thing that that he tells us in the playbook. Paul does in Romans 12. And then it's kind of interesting, because in Romans 14 says we need to, the message says we need to cultivate good relationships by not judging. By not judging. And I'll read that in a little bit, but, you know, how many of you think I have perfect doctrine and theology, or how many of you think you have perfect doctrine or theology? No one, right? Because if I knew what was wrong with my doctrine or theology, I'd try to change it. So I don't know what's wrong with it. Boy, I was going to pick on Frank Cortese, but he's not here today. But boy, I can tell you everything that's wrong. And I was going to pick on Mike Pierce, but he and I think alike. Too much. So I'm going to pick on Mike Easer because if I miss anything, he'll actually add, oh, you forgot this. So, he's got but, you know, I can tell you everything that's wrong with Mike's theology and Mike's doctrine. I really can. Everything that's wrong. Oh, no, he didn't. And isn't that true? We can tell what's wrong with all of these others' theology. We can tell what's wrong with the Baptists, what's wrong with the Catholics, what's wrong with that. Okay. Really? But we can't see what's wrong with ours. So I like again the message where it says the cultivating good relationships. It says welcome with open arms fellow believers who don't see things the way you do. Wow. And don't jump all over them every time they do or say something you don't agree with. Even when it seems that they are strong on opinions but weak in faith, in the faith department. Remember, they have their own history to deal with. Treat them gently. That's just a great way of looking at that verse in out of the message. And going back to my conversation with Sister Bradley, she was just saying, you know, it'd be great to be able to come in church and say, how you doing? Just say, this was an absolutely horrible week. You know, and have that genuine and not feel judged because you're not spiritual enough to, you know, to just go through it. And maybe to, in Romans 12, it tells us to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And maybe just weep with them and say, I know what you mean. That empathy just goes such a long way. And we were talking about something that really sort of solidified it. I as I'd say, I travel a lot. And so I actually have an apartment in Greenville, South Carolina, because I'm there every month for a few days, and it's just cheaper than having a hotel room. And I love to travel with just my backpack. That's the other advantage. But it's the Bible Belt, lots of Christians. And what our HR manager is, his wife is the chair of a ministry called the Carpenter's Table. And they feed a whole bunch of people in the Spartanburg area every single week and do a lot of things with Habitat for Humanity. And they had this event that I was unfortunately going to miss, and it was on Saturday, and it was called Knock Hunger Off Its Rocker. And I just said, you know, and it's their fundraising forum. I asked them, I go, so why is it Knock Hunger Off Its Rocker? Oh, well, RJ Rocker is sponsoring it, and we're going to have a whole bunch of people come in at the church. We're going to feed, you know, people and all that. Well, RJ Rocker is the Stone Brewery or Ballast Point. And I said, you know, in California, if we were to have a brewery on the property, you know, selling beer. You know, it just wouldn't happen. And yet, they, when they're looking at it, they look at California and just say, the way y'all dress out there. You know, both from a not real, you know, neat to provocative. It just is to them. And do any of us think that, you know, the way we dress out here is going to send us to, you know, straight down the pit? No. But I can tell you that's the way they feel. That's in our own country. You know, and yet we would think, oh, how could they do that? Ballast Point putting out. But that guy, the owner, happens to go to the church there and donates a lot of money and is an on-fire Christian and goes all over the place. So, again, we judge about that, and we, you know, we need to keep that in check. And you know, I recently, because I've been traveling all over the place in October, we have like a wellness program going on at work, and so our same HR VP just told us about, you know, how the leadership should get into it, and so this was in September, so we ended up three of us guys ended up getting a bet together on losing weight. And you've probably, if you've ever been to the border, you have that statue that's a piggy bank with a fat, bald man, you know, that's sitting there and he's on a scale and his eyes like that, you know, and he's in a towel and a big fat butt. That's the loser who doesn't lose. He gets, has to have that and bring it to the staff meeting or exactly, you know, on there. So it's giving us a lot of incentive, to do that. And so, it's kind of interesting because I travel a lot. And so it's very, difficult to, when you're not eating at home to do that. So I've decided to really cut out, you know, processed foods. So anything that is, comes in a box, I just don't eat. So it's, I eat meat. I eat everything I want to eat. I just don't eat processed food. So that means I don't have bread, which is the only hard part. Don't have pasta. Desserts were never an issue for me or whatever. And so I describe that. You get some looks. So if I really want to get the looks, I go, well, I'm eating a paleo diet. Oh no. You know, well, it's so bad for you. It's this, it's that, it's this. And I go, okay. And who made you? Yeah. You know, like from, from the, what was it? The, while you were sleeping in the church, who made you Pope? You know, I love that thing. It's just like, guys, it's just not eating processed. So because I'm not eating something that comes in a bag, that's now bad for me. You know, it's crazy. And then if you go to a paleo side, it's crazy because then some of them are saying, you know, there's so many, potato related deaths in the United States. You know, so it's just like, come on, you know, get real. So it's that whole, judging thing that just is crazy, on it. And all I can say is for me, it's not hard to do and I'm winning the bet. So that's the other thing. And I've changed the lifestyle and it's really actually easy for me to do. So it works. And I've done other things that help me travel because I'm across the country all over the place. I don't get jet lag for different techniques that I use that sound weird. And when I first started them, it was just like Kathy just said, well, you know, whether it's psychosomatic or not, does it matter? You're not having problems sleeping anymore. And, well, that's true. So some of them are really weird sounding and we love to ridicule, love to judge, love to do that. But I firmly believe that when you do that in the natural, it can't help but go over into the spiritual. And so we really need to temper that all the time, is just really temper the way we do that. And we need to try not to be the stumbling block. Again, later on in the message in Romans 14, it says, let's not be a stumbling block for others. Forget about deciding what's right for each other. Ooh. Don't decide what's right for someone else. Here's what you need to be concerned about, that you don't get in the way of someone else, making life more difficult than it already is. I'm convinced, Jesus convinced me, that everything as it is in itself is holy. We, of course, by the way, we treat it or talk about it, can contaminate it. So we can contaminate it. So cultivate your relationship with God, but don't impose it on others. Our relationship with God is ours, but don't impose it on anyone else. You're fortunate if your behavior and belief are coherent. Yeah. That's really true. If your behavior and your belief system are the same, wow. Go, that is great. But if you're not sure, if you notice that you are acting in ways inconsistent with what you believe, some days trying to impose your opinion on others, other days just trying to please them, then you know that you're out of line. If the way you live isn't consistent with what you believe, then it's probably wrong. Right. That's just an interesting way that it was put there. So, you know, just that whole judgment and putting my armor on someone else, we need to shy away from that. And the other thing is we need to remember that people that are feeling judged aren't necessarily being judged, but they're feeling that way. Right. And I heard a podcast that my son-in-law and daughter did about judgment. And he was talking about, he's a triathlete, and so he's talking about doing turns in the pool. And when he first started swimming, he was terrible doing turns in the pool, the laps and everything. And so he'd hit his head on the bottom of the pool or whatever. And so now he's getting pretty good at it, but he was swimming and he was saying he felt like people were looking at him and judging him and all this kind of stuff. And he just sort of fought through it. And then when he got out of the pool, the lifeguard came and said, "Hey, your turns are really looking good now. Do you mind if I give you another pointer?" But he told him, "Hey, your turns are really looking good." But he figured, he thought in his own mind, he thought he was being judged. So we need to take that in that factor. Sometimes no one's judging, but we feel like we're being judged, or other people may feel like we're being judged. So, we get rid of that judgment. But then the other thing we can do to just restore gently other people, restore others, is really the playbook that Paul gave us in Romans 12. He says our love needs to be genuine. It needs to be genuine. We need to be fervent in our zeal for the Lord. And that's sometimes as you're walking with the Lord, it's okay to say, you know what, I've lost the zeal. Because God gives us so many verses where he's going to renew our strength, have us soar on. So why would he give us that verse if he didn't think we perhaps might be drained out? So it's okay. It's okay to be genuine. I already talked about that. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Rejoice in help, in hope, I should say. Those that you don't get along with persecute you. What if we bless them, like it tells us to do that? And bless and do not curse them. And where it's possible for you, live in harmony and with one another. And again, we're right now we're sort of on a travel restriction at work. Large company. It's a public company, and public companies in North America always have to make their numbers for Wall Street, and we do a lot of dumb things. And even though we're doing quite well, we're not doing what we thought we were going to do. We're not doing what we told Wall Street we were going to do. So we have to clamp down on all of these things. And so, as you can imagine, there's a lot of angst and it's going on. You did this. It's because this didn't happen. Sales didn't do this. I'm in operation. You guys can't do that. Da da da. And you know what? Bible truths are so true, because a gentle answer turns away wrath, or you use honey instead of vinegar. It just makes it's like, oh, okay, it diffuses the thing so we can think rationally, because when money's on the line, a lot of times rational thought goes out the window. And it's going out the window where I am. It's scorched earth. We're going to, forget about January, December, January. We are just, it's going to be brutal for the next 2 months. But that's the life of a public company. So the other thing is just not knowing it all. It's okay to say, "Hey, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the answer is, but I'll pray with you. I don't know why that happened." So don't be wise in your own sights. And it talks a lot about dealing with our enemies or perceived enemies, about beating them and being real with them, not cursing them. And then the last thing I want to leave you with on that is just not to be overcome by evil, but to overcome evil with good. And that's such an important thing, because we tend to like to get down into the trenches and into the gutter, and we just can't do that. We just need to, look at the positive side and keep, don't let that evil contaminate us. And, yes, things are not good. I understand that. But, but God, because he can do a whole bunch of things, and we limit him from doing that. So as you come across people that perhaps have been downtrodden or whatever, it's okay. Hey, you're right. We were probably out of line, or that person was probably out of line, or that's it. But, God still loves you. He still loves you, and he's not going to give up on you. You know, you go back, and that whole theme has been there from the very beginning. You see, in God coming down to the garden to look for Adam and Eve after they had sinned and everything, that whole story is God was still coming out. You know, he was still looking for us. So as we fall away, God continues to look for us. He will not give up on us. And he will not give up on your loved one. He loves, fill in the blank, more than you could possibly ever love them. And he won't give up on them. Second Peter tells us that he would have that none would perish. And he's not slow the way we think things are slow. And so have that patience, but we're so used to everything happening like this all the time. We want instant results. You see it in, as we were talking about college basketball, the one and done everywhere. It just has to happen that year. You know, we don't see the long term, but God plays the long game. And so we need to make sure that we're not the obstacle and that we're actually a conduit and a safe haven so that people can come in and just say, you know what, I do feel comfortable here. And we've all blown it. And that's, you know, so fundamental because we've all blown it. And I blow it so much, it's incredible. And yet God continues to just put out his hands, his arms are open wide, inviting us to come in. So, you know, this Christmas season, as we're thinking about that, think about those people that you know. You know someone that needs to be restored. And maybe it's not, it maybe just uplifted in a new zeal. Do it with a gentle, gentle answer, a gentle response. And empathy goes a long way. Because we all have struggles. None of us can say we don't have struggles. And those struggles are to make us strong. And we persevere. And I just thank God that he is such a faithful God, because I've given up on so many things and God doesn't give up on myself and God doesn't. And that you've just got to take that to the bank with you. You know, is that God is for us. Who can be against us? Right? So let's close in prayer. Lord, we thank you that you came to seek and save the lost, Father God. And we just thank you that you sent your only son for each and every one of us, Lord. That, Lord, you paid the price for all of our transgressions, Lord. And you didn't do that under compulsion. You did that because you wanted to. And I thank you for that, Father. And I just ask you now that you would give each and every one of us a just renewed sense of zeal, a renewed sense of hope, Father God, and a new tenderness for all of those that are having doubts, that perhaps haven't been walking with you the way they would like to or the way they should, and that they would just feel open arms, Father God. They would just feel your presence and your love in their lives, Father, that they would really see the true meaning of Christmas, Father, that you came here to save us. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.